I want to encourage you as we start this study. It's a little bit like paint by numbers. Slowly the picture comes into focus. Or we paint layers of lacquer, one layer, then another layer. It takes some time to build the picture, but let's enjoy the journey. As we are students of, can we have the back screen on as well? Or not? As we are students of the Word, it's no mistake that it starts with the book of Genesis and it ends with the book of Revelation. Right from the beginning, right from the fall in Genesis 3, God had a plan of redemption. Sadly, many Christians, their worldview is incomplete. They think of God the Creator and Jesus the Savior. But the Bible clearly unfolds this wonderful plan of redemption, that God is a redeemer, that Jesus is redeeming, that which was lost, that which has fallen is yet to be redeemed. And as we study the Bible, we have to recognize this silver thread, this constant line of redemption that's going through the Scriptures by promise and ultimately by fulfillment. So that question, where is this going? There isn't enough looking forward in the Christian life and faith. We have a living hope that should stir our hearts, and we do well to be good students of that and stewards of that. Genesis 3:15, this messianic prophecy, speaking of one who would come to undo the effects of the curse. The promised one, the Messiah, who will be the seed of a woman, the seed of Abraham, the seed of Judah, etc., and of course the seed of David, the son of David. And the prophecies fulfilled at his first coming and have been fulfilled, and of course many awaiting his second coming. Now, as we look to the book of Daniel, the book of Daniel is such a crucial book. We had a wonderful journey through that book as a church, how important that is to have that foundation in some measure. It's a book that lays out the prophecies regarding the end of the age, regarding the end times. It's sadly a neglected book. Many Christians know parts of it, but not others. They tend to know the first half, but not the second half. Because the second half, and with chapter 2, is the prophecies and the visions of Daniel. It takes a little bit of work to teach it and to learn it. So they're sadly often neglected, but they are so important. One of the reasons the end times and books like Daniel are neglected is because they involve a lot of symbolism. You'll see that there are animals and wings and horns and all these types of things, and people get a little bit intimidated or turned off by that. Hosea 12:10 tells us, God says, I have spoken by the prophets, I have multiplied visions, I have given symbols through the witness of the prophets. God has taught with this symbolism for a reason. It would be the same that you might be trying to explain something to someone and you would draw a picture, you would try and help convey that in some way, and God has done the same in the Scriptures through symbolism. But the Bible explains the symbolism. There are no key symbols of prophecy that are not explained within the text. So we can, you know, rest at that. It's clear. Sad to think that many Christians, though, never study the book of Daniel or end times. Or perhaps they have been taught it, and they have been taught what's called replacement theology, which is the idea that the church has replaced Israel, and there is no future fulfillment of the prophecies for Israel. It's such a sad misinterpretation of the Scriptures. We are what you would call premillennialists or restorationist view. We look at a future timeline that includes Israel, and all the promises towards Israel will be fulfilled. So the book of Daniel sweeps across time from 500 BC all the way through the time of the cross, of course, all the way through church history, all the way to today and beyond into the future. It's amazing to think of that. And what Daniel does in his visions is that he predicts kingdoms or empires. He predicts them from the time, his time, which was the time of the Babylonian kingdom, all the way through to the last kingdom, or the last Gentile king, not notorious, infamous last Gentile king of the age, the Antichrist. And of course, which will be followed by Christ's ultimate earthly reign as the son of David. So the historical context of the book of Daniel, when the prophet was writing, he was one of the captives of Babylon. They were taken from Judah to Babylon in the captivity. It's a tragic hour in the history of Israel because they had been brought to the promised land and they did not heed the prophet's warnings all the way through the hundreds of years. And finally, they were taken captive and ended up in Babylon, despite all the prophets had said. Nevertheless, Jeremiah, one of the prophets, clearly said that the captivity would only be 70 years. So this is where Daniel starts as a young man, and for 70 years he is in captivity, and he prophesies at the beginning all the way to the end as an old man. So let's jump in, Daniel 1:1. Now, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And that's a dagger to the heart to read that. That this, you know, heathen Gentile king would come and besiege God's city, would destroy the city, that Jeremiah the prophet would sit on the hills weeping, writing the book of Lamentations when he saw the city destroyed, the temple destroyed, the people taken captivity. Oh, what a tragic hour that was. But notice, the Lord gave Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, into his hand. And this is important to recognize. Right from the beginning, all the way through the following empires, all the way through to today and our own stage of history, and all the way into the future, Daniel tells us in 2:21 that God puts up kings and takes down kings. That he is not taken by surprise. He is working his purpose. Yes, evil has some freedom, but God is ultimately in control and weaves things together to bring about his purpose of redemption. And we find great comfort in that. So, Daniel chapter 2 opens with Nebuchadnezzar having his famous dream. And in the dream, it was a huge, colossal image, and the image was made of different metal sections. And as in the dream, as he's beholding the image, a rock comes and to the feet of the image, and it destroys the image. And Nebuchadnezzar is so troubled by the dream, and before he had the dream, he was wondering to himself, what comes after this? And this is God answering him through this dream. And he says, who can tell me the dream and the interpretation? And no one could, but Daniel could. And Daniel interpreted the image or the dream as a timeline. He showed that the metal sections predicted world empires. Babylon, that present kingdom, followed by another kingdom, the Medes and the Persians, followed by the kingdom of Greece, followed by the Roman Empire, and then ultimately looking ahead to the ultimate eternal kingdom of Christ. So, he tells us in verse 29, as for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while you were on your bed, wondering what would come to pass after this, and God, the one who makes secrets known, has shown this to you. And he tells him about the image. The image's head was of gold, the chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and clay. And then he says, you watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them into pieces. And then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, the gold were crushed together, became like chaff. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Again, a general overview is these future kingdoms ultimately ending with the kingdom of Christ in the end, pictured here by the rock, the second coming of Christ, and the and the kingdom that would follow. And then he interprets the dream in verse 37. He says, "You, O king, a king of kings," and notice this, "for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom." Again, a key phrase, given you power, given you strength and glory. "Wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, the birds of heaven, he has given them into your hands." This principle is echoed all the way through Daniel, that God rules in the affairs and the kingdoms of men, that God is at work. And he says, and here is the first interpretation, "You are the head of gold." That's the Babylonian kingdom from 605 to 539 BC. And then he says, "And after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to yours." And this will be the Medo-Persian kingdom, followed, starting with King Cyrus, who turned the captivity from 539 till 331. Then he says, "Another, a third kingdom of bronze shall rule over all the earth." And that bronze represents the kingdom of Greece under Alexander from 331 to 168. By the way, you might have the question, well, how do we know that these parts of the image represented this kingdom? Well, we know from Daniel chapter 8 in different symbolism that he clearly says in 8:20 that the ram that you saw having two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. And in the next verse, "And the male goat is the kingdom of Greece." It's not left to our imagination. It's clearly spelled out for us. This is what it represents. And what's amazing is that this is 500 BC, hundreds of years beforehand, and Greece, that Greece would rise up under Alexander to be an empire is an incredible prediction. And that's why critics of the Bible particularly hate the book of Daniel. Now, back to the image, the iron legs representing Rome, the East and the Western empires of Rome in the two legs. Now, I should mention there is another view of this that it could rather represent the Islamic caliphate. There is an idea that the fourth kingdom and the future revived version of that kingdom is the Islamic caliphate. Take it as you will. The traditional interpretation is it refers to Rome and a revived future version of the Roman Empire is what we are waiting for prophetically. So Rome from 168 to, depends how you date that, but 476 AD could be a date we're looking at. The timeline continues in 241, "Where as you saw the feet and the toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided or disintegrated or separated." And we know that Rome actually was never conquered, but rather it separated or was divided. We could say that it's residual today in Italy, France, Great Britain, Germany, etc. This is what was once the Roman Empire, the old Roman Empire. And he says in 242, he speaks about the toes, the 10 toes of the feet. And this is important in the prophecy. For the fourth kingdom is represented in two phases. The toes, the feet and the toes, are not listed as a different kingdom, but they are recognized separately, we could say, to be a second phase. This is commonly recognized as that we are waiting for a yet future revived version of that kingdom. The 10 toes of the image refer to 10 kings. And you say, well, how do we know that? Well, in Daniel 7, again, it's different symbolism, but it clearly tells us that the 10 horns in that parallel imagery are the 10 kings. Daniel 7:24 says, the 10 horns are 10 kings, so we don't have to wonder, it's spelled out for us. Also in Revelation 17:12, "And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings." So don't get lost in the symbolism. The Bible tells us what it means. We're looking for a future unification of 10 kings, a one world government, which will have that tenfold alliance. Bible scholars and Christians for decades have been looking and waiting for this confederation of European nations. They would join together with treaties and alliances and pacts, etc. When the EEC, or the European Economic Community, was founded in 1957, interestingly enough, by the Treaty of Rome, that's what it was called, must have got a lot of attention in the Christian world. Greece became the 10th nation in 1981, and people must have been, this is it, this is it. 1993, the EEC became part of the EU, which is currently 27 member states. Now, we don't know when this union will form, but we will watch the world stage, and sometime it will happen. This timeline, from the time of Nebuchadnezzar all the way up to the Antichrist, is known as the times of the Gentiles. It comes from something that Jesus said in Luke 21:24, Jerusalem will be trampled by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Again, from the fall of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar to the last Gentile ruler, the times of the Gentiles, where Jerusalem will be under Gentile dominance to some degree. Today, if you visit there, the mosque, the Dome of the Rock, is on the temple site. There's this incredible irony when you visit there and you consider the temple site, and there is the Dome of the Rock there, and there is the stalemate, and that's how it is. We're still there in the times of the Gentiles, of course. This timeline is drawn out by Daniel. And all of his visions end with this crown, 2:44. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. In other words, it won't be succeeded like the other kingdoms were. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So what does it mean? In Nebuchadnezzar's dream, that rock that was cut out without hands that struck the image is a picture of the ultimate return and the initiation of his literal earthly future kingdom, which will be for 1,000 years. So he gives us a timeline of future history. We see that? Is that clear? It's quite clear, isn't it? Now, this timeline is echoed in other of Daniel's visions. In chapter 7, it's the first of the four visions. You've got Nebuchadnezzar's dream and then four visions. In the first of the visions, chapter 7, it's different symbolism. It's not image with metals, but it's creatures or beasts, if you will. There is the lion, the bear, the leopard, and the fourth beast, which is not really recognizable, to represent these same four kingdoms. He says, and four great beasts in chapter 7, verse 3, came up from the sea, each different from one another. He says the first was like a lion. So the lion, and you can see it's a lion with wings, they're based on an animal, but they're a little bit different. The lion is equated with the head of gold. They are both speaking of that first empire, Nebuchadnezzar's empire. He says, I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to us. That's an amazing allusion to Daniel 4 with the humiliation of Nebuchadnezzar. You can read it and you can see that. It says, and suddenly another beast, a second like a bear, it was raised up on one side and had 3 ribs in its mouth. All these details are important. Between its teeth, the bear, known for its strength and its fierceness in battle, speaks of the Medo-Persian kingdom. The bear is equated with the silver chest and arms in the dream of Nebuchadnezzar. After this, I looked, and there was another, like a leopard, in chapter 7, verse 6, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. And you'll notice it also had 4 heads. The leopard is incredibly fast and swift. The wings are added to add to that imagery of being so incredibly fast and quick. The Greeks under Alexander swiftly conquered the known world. The image is fitting. And notice the beasts had four heads. And this is interesting that when Alexander died, and he, so the story goes, on his deathbed said, "I leave my kingdom to the strong," leaving the opportunity for his generals to fight it out, which they did. And eventually, it got down to four generals, Cassander, Lysimachus, Seleucus, and Ptolemy. These four, the Greek Empire divided into these four parts. Amazing that that imagery is in the prophecy, that there were four heads. And dominion was given to the beast. And after this, in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong, huge iron teeth. Notice it's not identified with an animal. It was devouring and breaking in pieces and trampling the residue with its feet. Again, most commentators identify this with Rome, the legions trampling through the known world, etc. It was different from all the beasts that were before it in that it had 10 horns. And again, the 10 horns are equated with the 10 toes in Daniel 2, and they are speaking of 10 kings. Speaks of, again, that union of a future revived fourth version of the fourth empire. Now, this is an important moment. Are you ready? Because here in Daniel's vision, in Daniel 7, chapter 8, Daniel 7, verse 8, he introduces the Antichrist to us. This is Daniel speaking. "I was considering the horns on this fourth beast, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and mouth speaking great words." This introduces this world leader, this future king, again known as the Antichrist. He is not a sideline character in the scriptures, as many may think. He actually has 33 different names in the Old Testament. Isn't that amazing? And 13 names in the New Testament. 46 names are given, or titles are given, to this character. Again, he is the last Gentile ruler, the last Gentile king of the times of the Gentiles. Revelation 17, 13 tells us that the kings are of one mind and give their power and authority to the beast. He overthrows three of them. This is echoing this. "Before whom three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots, and there in this horn were the eyes of a man," etc., etc. In verse 9, he goes on to say, Daniel says, "And I watched until the thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated, and his garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire." Incredible imagery. Speaking of this moment where the Ancient of Days, God himself on the throne, what a glorious thing to recognize. If you look at the context, of course, this is a throne in a temple. It's almost like a courtroom. It tells us in the next verse that the books were opened. It's interesting that at the end of man's history, at the end of the timeline of these evil empires and the corruption and injustices, it ends up in a courtroom and the books are opened. Verse 11, Daniel says, "I watched then because of the sound of these great words which the horn was speaking. I watched until the beast was slain, and its body destroyed and given to the burning flame." Verse 13, "I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him." Unspeakable. This is something that will be future. This will happen. what Daniel is saying and predicting and prophesying, this is history in advance. This is waiting to unfold with its effect on the earth. That the Ancient of Days, there at the end of the age, and the return of Christ, so beautifully pictured, one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. Amazing. This phrase, the Son of Man, is the most common self-designation of Jesus. It's used over 80 times in the New Testament. He referred to himself as the Son of Man. And what's astounding about this phrase is that it originates here. In other words, every time Jesus referred to himself as the Son of Man, he was saying, I am the one that Daniel spoke of in Daniel 7:13. I am the one who will ultimately come with the clouds of heaven. I am the one who will come to the Ancient of Days, who will receive a kingdom. I am the Son of Man. It's amazing to think of that. He wasn't just saying, oh, I am a man, or God in the human expression, but he was much more than that. He was clearly identifying himself as the one prophesied. Some of the uses there, Matthew 16:27, the Son of Man will come in glory, in the glory of his Father with his angels. The next verse, till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Matthew 19:28, when the Son of Man sits on the throne of his glory. Matthew 24:30, of course. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. Amazing. The crowning scene, the next verse in Daniel 7:14, then to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all the peoples, nations, languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom the one which shall not be destroyed. Amen? Wow. Hallelujah. It's amazing. Revelation 11:15 puts it this way. The kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. Amazing, eternal kingdom. So how does this affect Daniel? As he's getting this vision, he sees the horns, he's thinking of the imagery, he's hearing the words of this, the great words spoken by this king, even against the Most High. How does this affect Daniel? Well, Daniel asks one who stands by in the vision for an interpretation. He asks him specifically about the 10 horns and specifically about the little horn. He wants to know more about the identity of this king. Tells us in 21, I was watching and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them. Now remember, this is God given. God gives the dominion of the Antichrist over the saints for a season in the end. And he has that dominion until, notice that word, until the Ancient of Days came and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. So he's given dominion, he's given liberty, he's given power and authority for a time, but it will come to an end. And now Daniel gets an answer about the horns, about the kings in 24. Here it is, where he says, the 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom. And another shall rise after them. He shall be different from the first ones. He shall subdue 3 kings. And 25, the next verse, he shall speak great words against the Most High. Perhaps you trace this verse in your mind back to Isaiah 14, that foreshadowing of Lucifer's own fall, where it's called the 5 I wills of Lucifer. I will exalt myself. I will exalt myself above the clouds. And finally, I will exalt myself against what? Above what? The Most High. I will exalt myself again above the Most High. And this is what is spoken by the Antichrist. Perhaps at this point, this man is actually possessed by Satan himself. And these are the words that he speaks against the Most High. and shall intend to change the times and the law, then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time, a times, and half a time. Now, this phrase is a curious one, and it actually refers to the most documented time period in the scriptures. It is a time of 3.5 years. Here it's referred to in this terminology here, a time, that's 1 year, a times, that's 2 years, and a half a time, that's the half. It's 3.5 years. They shall be given into his hand for 3.5 years. Now, I think it's time we look at a chart and a timeline. Are you ready? We know that the Old Testament prophets predicted, and sure enough, Christ came fulfilling the prophecies in his first coming, followed by the church age. At the end of the church age, there will be a period of 7 years. It's an all-important period of time. It's the centerpiece, if you will. When you consider the end times, this is the centerpiece. It is what happens during these 7 years. And that 7 years ends with the parousia, the second coming of Christ, followed by his kingdom on the earth. It's this 7 years that is important. Let's take a closer look. If we take that 7 years and we stretch it out, the 7 years start with a covenant that is made by this little horn, by the Antichrist, by this future king. He makes a covenant with Israel. Halfway through the 7 years, he breaks the covenant, and that's when he really reveals himself for who he truly is. His true colors are made known. And we'll look at more of the details of that later. But this 7.5 year period is split into two. It's after that breaking of the covenant at the midpoint, after he reveals himself for who he really is, that this unbelievable persecution unfolds against the Jews primarily, and in fact, all Christians, anyone of faith, they will be under what is known as the Great Tribulation, which follows that period. So this time period of 3.5 years is referred to in the scriptures as 42 months, 1260 days, half a week, in other words, half of seven, and again in the terminology here, God making it clear, this isn't symbolic, this isn't to be, this means 3.5 years on the clock, on the calendar. It's literal. Revelation 13:5, I'll read it to you. And he was given a mouth, speaking great things. Again, this is of the Antichrist. And great blasphemies. And he was given authority to continue, here it is, for 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. And it was granted to him to make war with the saints and overcome them, and authority was given him over every tribe, every tongue, and every nation. Let's go back to Daniel 7. Here it is again. But the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion and consume and destroy it forever. This is also echoed in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 8. And then the lawless one, this is another one of his names, will be revealed. When will he be revealed? At the midpoint, at the halfway through that 7 year period, when he breaks the covenant, he shall be revealed, whom the Lord Jesus will overthrow with the breath of his mouth and destroy it by the splendor of his coming, which will happen at the end of the 3.5 years. And then Daniel 7:27, then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to his people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve him and obey him. So do we see that? Do we grasp that in some measure, that what do we see at the end of Daniel's visions? What do we see at the ultimate crown and conclusion of the age? The church age, or the human history, will end with this all-important period of 7 years where this particular last Gentile king, this powerful, charismatic Gentile ruler who will unify the nations and speak great things even against the Most High, who will persecute the saints and unleash an incredible Holocaust against the Jews. But how does it end? Oh, it ends with the Lord coming back with ultimate victory, vanquishing all of his foes, defeating the Antichrist and his armies, and setting up his kingdom. This is one of those moments. Oh, we need to step back from all the details and just marinate in that wonderful truth and find such great comfort in the scriptures, in seeing the unfolding timeline that has been fulfilled and just as surely will be fulfilled in the future. The running theme through the book of Daniel is the kingdoms of men, corrupt and evil and all about self-rule ultimately, as they were succeeded and came to an end, but there is an eternal kingdom that will know no end, and Jesus will be the king.